Hey, everybody, we're coming in a little hot this week, or cold, or breezy, or something else to do with the weather. James Romer is our guest on the MTOM Show podcast. I'm Paul Yeager, your guide for this installment of the podcast, which is a production of Iowa PBS. Mr. Romer has been a guest twice before, and each time we get to going on weather, and I think many of you find it interesting and fascinating to hear what he has to say. We all kind of care about the weather in one way or another, whether it impacts our bottom line or we're just kind of curious what's going on. So this installment, we're going to get to the cold, natural gas, inflation, South American weather, wheat, drought, 2022 weather. We're also going to talk about the OJ crop and what that means coming out of South Florida in the citrus greening. If you want to see a story about citrus greening, it is on our Facebook page recently, as we reposted that about what is at stake with the OJ crop. But also, I need to add, there was a part in this discussion where James and I, he had a graphic in the background that listed how much things have gone up year over year, and there was a chart that had 200%. He and I couldn't read the chart, but what it was is a 200% gain in hydrogenous ammonia. That's the crossword puzzle clue for this installment of the podcast. If you have any feedback for me, hit me up at paul.yeager@iowapbs.org. My thanks for those of you that share this or tell friends that you listen to it. And we thank you for listening. Here's James Romer. James, there's never a dull moment with you, right? When's the last time you had a dull moment? 19, like what, 74, 75?
A dull moment? Never. I need to kind of chill out a little bit, I think. It's either playing tennis 6 hours a week or watching the markets doing research 50, 60 hours a week. So well, I need to come out to Iowa and meditate a little bit.
There you go. And don't forget, you also watch the weather, too. I hear you've been expanding some of your work.
Yeah, you know, for many years, I lived in Iowa back in the 1980s, worked for Freeze Notice Weather. We consulted with F.C. Stone and Stotler, all these grain companies. Went out my own, advised hedge funds for years. Now I started my own commodity weather newsletter called Weather Wealth at my website, bestweatherinc.com. I have clients, corn, soybean, wheat farmers, natural gas producers all over the world, Iowa too, of course. It's fun. I try to give people an insight before the market reacts in multiple commodities and also long-range weather forecasts too.
Well, we're recording this. Let's just give the spoiler alert now. We're recording this before it gets cold, but the forecast doesn't look like it's going to break. We just got done with a foot of snow. You're going to now show me behind you kind of how... Is this another polar vortex? I mean, this is going to be cold that we dealt with. Where's this cold air coming from?
Well, you know, we have a La Nina event, and not all La Ninas are necessarily cold winters by any stretch of the imagination, but this one actually is. Because we have some blocks over Greenland, that high you see in the upper right-hand corner of your screen, bringing down that cold polar vortex, that's a response to La Nina, warm ocean temperatures off the coast of North Carolina to the Atlantic, and a variety of other what we call teleconnections. So these are the kind of the temperatures this last week. Look at this, 35 degrees below normal in some areas. It's about time, because we really haven't had a cold winter for really several years.
Well, if we never got, my father used to say, if you didn't have good ice by Thanksgiving or New Year's, you weren't going to have a good ice fishing year. But there are some people who are finally getting a chance to ice fish, but it does get dangerous. But this is an area that is used to it. Last year, or has it been that 2 years ago already, when Texas, that they weren't used to that.
No, they're really not. I mean, I am someone that does believe the planet is really warming, and there's definitely some influence of climate change and solar cycles together. You know, the weather's just getting more and more extreme. The oceans are changing, the Arctic is changing, and that's resulting in these extreme fluctuations in commodity prices and grains, for example. Soybeans, you know, rocketed here a week or so ago in the drought in Argentina, now are breaking. Just very, very volatile weather. This cold, obviously, affecting some of the energy markets, like heating oil especially. Not as much natural gas, because supplies are really, really adequate, but propane and heating oil prices spiking because of a lack of supplies.
All right, so natural gas, let's start with that then. Back in October, that was the big story, is that Europe was having spikes in natural gas, which led to some problems with fertilizer. Kind of all these things are tied together. But why are they all tied together?
Well, Europe, has been importing a lot of LNG, liquid natural gas, in the United States. Russia wasn't exporting anything for a while, so we had a squeeze with people concerned about the hot summer, the drought out west, where a lot of people had to switch from hydropower. There was no water in California and Oregon last summer, to natural gas. And then that, combined with the tight supplies in Europe, created a major spike in the natural gas market. But with a warm December, prices really came flying south, and we've had adequate supplies here, really. It's going to take an extended, really, 2 months of bitter cold weather, which could potentially happen, I think, to get the natural gas market out of the doldrums. Obviously, this cold weather you mentioned before is actually good for drying out the soil, killing a bunch of bugs. Hopefully, we won't have a really cool, wet spring, and farmers in a few months will be able to get their plants crops planted pretty early this year.
Well, in the United States, they're kind of counting on having another record crop. We need South America to have good production. Let's shift to South America before we come back to the United States and get into wheat. Argentina is an area. Normally, we always talk about Brazil. Why are we talking more about Argentina this year?
Well, they're the second or third biggest producer, of course, of soybeans and corn. We have very tight stocks of corn and soybeans. So any disruption in South American production can, of course, create a bull market in corn and beans. This is as of mid to late December. Notice the red, which in that area where you see red from basically Parana, where rivers are the lowest in 100 years, all the way down into Argentina. That whole red region produces over half of the South American soybean and corn crop. And we had this dry weather, this ridge you see here to the left there, that red ridge was sitting over Argentina and Brazil until this past week, creating 110-degree heat. Boy, you could knock off 10, 20 million metric tons in a heartbeat if that ridge would stay over South America, and that red area would have expanded. But as we're seeing right now, I put out a forecast actually quite early, about 2 to 3 weeks ago, about the drought breaking in Argentina. And sure enough, this is the way the weather forecast pattern's been in mid-January. Look at all the the green and blue. That is going to ease the drought conditions, at least temporarily. So as a result, corn and bean prices may not skyrocket anytime soon because of this change in this ridge you see here. That red ridge, as I mentioned, that was actually sitting over Argentina and Brazil for most of December and the first part of January.
So when it's dry, I mean, not to mention weather and commodity. I mean, you follow commodities as well. Was that, I won't say expected, but was that a nice surprise for U.S. producers to have that weather pattern develop over Argentina and open up a little opportunity for maybe an extended run higher?
Well, obviously for the farmers in Iowa and all throughout the Midwest, I mean, the ideal situation, of course, is to have that ridge sitting right over Argentina and Brazil, and to see this red area expand, particularly in the pollination stage of corn in January and the soybean pod setting stage in February. That's like July and August, obviously, here in the United States. We want to see this red area expand through February. If so, we'd have a 10 or 20% rally in corn and beans. That is suspect right now because of this change in the ridge I mentioned, moving to the west, as you see in Argentina. Remember, the flow goes south to north, the opposite in the northern hemisphere, from Argentina northward. It's a wetter pattern for Argentina. So that's taking at least temporarily some of the bullishness out of the corn and bean market right now. But it's potentially going to be a hot summer. We can talk about this if you want.
For us, let's finish up quick in South America. Can you go back to that that red map you just had with the red in South America? That one or the other one? When does their window close that it really allows the most opportunity for volatility in the commodity markets? Is it the 1st of February? I mean, if things regulate by Valentine's Day, March 1, is that crop in the barn, whatever saying you want to use in Argentina?
Yeah, it's the same thing, as the corn crops say in July and August. And a lot of people were bullish corn last May and June. I wasn't. I was bullish oats and spring wheat because of multiple droughts in Canada, Russia, and the Northern Plains. But we actually lucked out. We had timely rains. even though we had some hot temperatures in July and August last summer, scattered areas of drought, the corn and bean market really didn't react. So the same thing in South America, you know, July down there, or July here in the United States is January down in South America. So February is really the time frame. If you don't get hot, dry weather consistently, then the weather market's pretty much over. And then it's all about demand and what planting prospects are in the March 31st intentions report here in the United States. So further be about a month or so after mid to late February, the weather's not really a factor. But given the tight stock situation, obviously, April through July and August is going to be critical for the grain market.
We talk a lot about Argentina, but is some of the same content hold true for Brazil? I mean, you've still got more of a dry color behind you that you're showing on that map, but that's really been a tale of two regions, right? A little too much rain in the north and pretty dry in the south.
Exactly right. I mean, for an ideal bull market right now in corn and beans, you want to see that dry area red over Argentina and Brazil the next 4 to 6 weeks, and you want to see it wet in northern Brazil where there's been pod disease and mold and things like that. That whole situation is actually changing a little bit. And the reason it is, this is called the Southern Oscillation Index. Sorry, my head's come in the screen there a little bit. As you see that arrow drop, that red line, the Southern Oscillation Index means that La Nina temporarily is actually weakening a little bit. Now, that may only be a temporary feature, but it's enough to produce a lot of rain in Argentina and southern Brazil here through the beginning of February. If we were to see the SOI index very positive, and that has to do with pressure differences between Tahiti and Australia and cool ocean temperatures, the more positive you see that graph to the left there, when we had the drought in December and early January, the more positive the SOI index and La Nina is, the stronger the chances are for South American weather problems. Notice how that red line actually begins to sink south, more toward a neutral La Nina event here the next couple weeks.
All right, let's go back now to what you wanted to talk about, and I just railroaded you, as always, James. What are we expecting here in the United States for a growing season? Are we La Nina or El Nino?
We're going to have a weak La Nina, and not all La Ninas create reductions in Midwest crops, but probably 70% of them actually do. So my in-house program, Climate Predict, this is the forecast in April and May. You see the analog years there on your left. 2011 and the mid-1950s especially, you know what happened then. We had a drought expand from the southern plains, which is actually happening right now. Let me just go back here for a minute. This is the red. This is the drought that really hasn't gone away for the last year or so.
Is that a current drought map right there?
It's a current drought map. You see, Iowa's kind of neutral right now. We got a lot of snow.
Right, but we're holding still strong in northern Texas and in Oklahoma, and that's right where your arrow's at. Sorry.
Yeah, right. And that's why the wheat market is beginning to rally right now. I think we're going to have a drought in the wheat areas that may expand where you see red here. This is my program. May expand north again into the Western Corn Belt sometime later on next spring. So my program, Climate Predict, that I have in my newsletter, looks at sea ice, looks at ocean temperatures in the Atlantic, looks at the Pacific, looks at La Nina. Based upon all these teleconnections, I have like 28 of them all over the world. A teleconnection is a climatic event that gives an indication of a weather pattern, sometimes 4 to 6 or 8 months down the road. When I combine everything that's going on with the oceans and the climate and the cold winter, these two analogs, both of them, suggested that drought expanding from the wheat areas into the Western Corn Belt once again as we get into the spring and summer. And that's backed by some models. I don't like looking at all the different models. There's a European model.
No, we don't need to talk about the Euro model.
But the Japanese model is also kind of agreeing with my program. That's the summer forecast right now.
Okay, so James, if we would have had this conversation a year ago, would it have indicated Canada and the Western United States and their drought? And did that line up?
Yeah, it really did. And, you know, it ended up, we had the second biggest production ever in yield in corn and beans in Iowa. Thank goodness for all the Iowa farmers, and most of them escaped. It was about 100 to 200 miles to the west, particularly over South Dakota and up across the northern plains. That yields dropped, 15 to 25% below normal, particularly oats and also spring wheat. We had a huge squeeze in the northern hemisphere. We lucked out. This summer may not be as lucky. This is the forecast, the map on top for June through August, the average temperatures, not written in stone. Certainly things can change depending on what we call teleconnections, sea ice or ocean temperatures. Any slight adjustment could throw off the models. But for right now, based on La Nina coming back, though again, it's weakening right now, and that's why Argentina is getting all this rain, and soybeans have sold off here 60 cents into the middle part of January. The upper map is red is above normal temperatures. Lower map is rainfall, where you see that brown arrow is below normal rainfall. So I'm pretty confident that at least the third and a half of the corn and soybean belt is going to have some hot, dry conditions next summer.
Well, you also talked about oats and wheat. We've earlier in this podcast, I don't know, it's probably been 3-6 months already since we talked about the oats crop, and oats knew a whole lot of information. And the big reason for that is it was so dry in key oat producing areas of Canada. You've got British Columbia and Alberta and Manitoba up there on the map, and they were dry. And are they still dry?
Yeah, look at these. Look at this map. This is as of early January, where you see the red and the orange. There's still a drought there. They're getting a lot of snow and ice in British Columbia, but you know most of the oats and spring wheat is grown in Manitoba, Saskatchewan, down to Northern Plains. So it's going to be a crazy, exciting April and May. If this La Nina doesn't weaken too quickly, then we're going to see a potential bull market in grains this spring and summer again.
What about our crazy storm that we had in December that went through the wheat area? I know we talked on Market to Market on the panel show it'd be two episodes ago. We were discussing, we just haven't seen a lot of pictures of what is left of that wheat crop. We know that wheat can die several times. It's got more lives than a cat. But what do you know about the status of the U.S. wheat crop that was damaged in that storm?
Well, this is a little bit old now, but this is basically the top and subsoil moisture. It's part of it's actually off the screen. Quite a bit of it is in the short to very short status. And the fact there wasn't any snow cover there, some of the winds and cold temperatures have probably really nipped the wheat crop. Again, like you say, wheat has nine lives. And that's one reason why wheat prices until mid-January have gone down. They haven't really reacted to the weather, but now between the frost, the freezes, look at this, temperatures down to single numbers in Illinois last week, and also this drought expanding, I think the markets begin to watch this situation. Again, wheat has nine lives. We won't know until March and April when the crop comes out of dormancy just how bad these windstorms and drought actually are, but I think prices have sold off enough in wheat that we'll probably go into some kind of bull market here going into the spring.
Do you want to give any market advice about what someone should do and predict and protect themselves? I mean, and the reason I kind of make you squirm a little bit is, I mean, there's this hesitancy for many people who heard warnings last year and thought, oh, this is great price, I'm selling. Now then the rat market may have rallied a dollar or two, which is in some cases 50 to 60%.
Well, one of the things I do with WeatherWealth at my website, bestweatherinc.com, I do give advice to farmers and traders. So this is as of, I'm sorry, I'm on the screen there a little bit, the 18th of January, about a week ago. To the left of your screen is the price of wheat versus soybeans last summer into the early fall. Look how wheat prices exploded versus soybeans. We didn't have a bull market in soybeans and corn because even with all this talk of drought, it really was only 20% of the corn and soybean growing areas that had it. But the wheat areas around the world had major drought. So you saw a squeezing wheat. You saw the wheat prices go up relative to the beans there on the left. Then in the center, that big dip down, that was back in December and early January. We began to see the Argentine and Australian wheat crop hit the market. So the squeeze in wheat ended about 3 to 5 weeks ago. And the soybean and Argentina drought created a bull market in beans and corn. So there you see wheat prices going down relative to the corn and soybeans, if that makes sense. Now with the drought breaking in Argentina, you see we're kind of bottoming right now, the wheat bean spread. Wheat is beginning to go up. And I think wheat could outperform corn and beans here over the next month or two, as long as South American weather stays relatively. It's complicated.
Isn't it something to think about? Because wheat has performed way better than a lot of folks thought it should. And to think that maybe there's more to come.
Well, part of it, I think, is also inflation. I mean, and we can see, you know, how inflation has hit the farm country here over the last year, the rise in propane, farmland up about, I'm trying to read this, what, 10 to 15% over the last year.
Okay, but I want to make sure before you tell me all these details, this is inflation from December 20 to December of 2021. This is year over year numbers that you're showing us. Okay, go back. Sorry.
Right. And I think wheat is really an inflationary commodity, as well as crude oil and many other ones, sometimes even more than corn and soybeans. You saw a lot of hoarding, you know, Russia and these foreign countries just buying all the wheat they could because people are standing in bread lines because of COVID and everything, right? So you saw a combination of the droughts last summer for wheat and the inflationary spiral. Now, again, wheat broke about 15% here the last 2 months because of the big harvest in Argentina and Australia. Once we get back into the Northern Hemisphere weather, there could be a big squeeze again and inflationary pressures once again in the grain market, which is good news, obviously, for farmers as we go on into through 2022 later on.
What's right behind your head at plus 200%? Go the other way. Go to your right. What does that say? I can't read to the liquid petroleum, and then what's the plus 200%?
That's how much weight. That's how much weight I've gained over the last year. Or two. No, sitting here, 200% is. I'm not sure.
The farthest right on your chart.
Yes. College education. No, I don't know.
Well,
I can't
I'll tell.
Tell
you. That's yeah.
but it's a little sorry about that. But most of these red bars you see are propane prices, natural gas, farmland in the Midwest. The overall inflationary spiral of commodities. You know, we have seen a relative bull market in many of these markets over the last 6 months. Like, all right. look at this. This is the CRB index. Right, breaking out. Look at that long-term bear market for several years since the droughts of 2012. We were in a bear market spiral. Look, we've broken out technically here over the last year or so. So that's good for commodities. Inflationary concerns and also weather problems around the world continuing La Nina. So.
Well, so when were we last at 250? We're headed towards 250. So what's that bar? About a third of the way over. What's the bottom year here? This is a monthly index, or is this just a look in the last year?
This is actually going back, I think, about 5 years.
Okay.
So we broke it up, that horizontal line there, you see the red?
Yeah.
We broke it above resistance probably over the last 6 months. It's really the first breakout, technically, in the CRB index we've seen in at least 5 to 10
okay.
years.
All right. That makes sense. So again, so those of you who are on audio, of listening to this one, I'm going to suggest strongly to watch the YouTube because it's fun to try to keep up with James. As I told him what we were going to talk about today, it's like just I think five charts, and I'll interrupt you a whole bunch because I just want
to bring it. We have 50 charts. Okay. thanks, Paul.
Okay, so inflation. What do you think's to blame on all of this? I mean, you talk about natural gas prices and. We're starting to see these educational surveys come out that it's these two or three rounds of stimulus of two administrations that are really coming to roost. Printing of money, is that going to be the biggest hanger?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think COVID has created incredible bottlenecks, as you know, of exports of goods. You know, coffee had an explosion because of droughts and no containers of coffee been able to be shipped. So there's been all this pent-up demand over the last year, as well as wheat. But you're absolutely right. The stimulus packages, during the COVID situation here over the last couple of years has been inflationary. From what I understand, you know, obviously the Fed's going to have to raise interest rates to cool off the economy right now. But it really takes 2 or 3 years of consistent interest rate rises to cool off inflation, which means even though this could be actually bearish the stock market, we've seen 3 or 4 increases in the interest rates over the next 12 to 18 months could definitely cool off the stock market, but it will not necessarily cool off inflation, particularly if we have weather problems around the world for another year to year and a half. And, you know, the green new economy, whether you believe in it or not, with climate change, you know, a lot of countries like China want to go zero carbon in the next 20 to 30 years, electric cars, carbon capture companies. You need silver, you need tin, you need what's called trace metals. And we're seeing an explosion of some of these metals, which is inflationary also, in order for to build electric cars, et cetera, over the next, you know, 5 or 10 years. So it's a combination of things creating inflation right now.
And we're seeing the discussion of, well, maybe not this battery. Maybe the battery should be made out of this. Or you know what? Maybe that one's not so bad because that's not as rare of a metal. We're seeing pivot in real time. We often talk, whether it's on this podcast, I know I talk about it with my fellow producer, Peter Tubbs. We always say, James, that this pandemic really just accelerated a lot of things that were already happening. And that doesn't look like it's changed. Okay. Looking down my list, the one thing that I want, there's a couple things I want to wrap up with here. One is, did I see in your backyard smallest OJ orange juice crop or orange crop in how long? What's the forecast now?
Boy, I didn't know you asked me about orange juice. How many people have orange trees in Iowa?
Yeah, we like it in the morning. More at night with something else.
I drink coconut water and coffee these days. I don't forget it. I lived in Iowa for many years. I lived in Florida for about 13. Smallest crop in I don't know, 50 to 100 years right now. Not because of freezes, but because of citrus greening, which is a disease we've been fighting with for over the last 10 to 15 years. The orange juice market really hasn't really rallied till recently. It's orange juice prices have rallied also because OJ vitamin C is a good solution with COVID, you know, besides getting your vaccine, if you believe in vaccine, you know, zinc, vitamin C, vitamin D, but we need to talk more about that actually, how to stay healthy, but eat Iowa corn, for example. But orange juice has gone up because of the low crop and also the demand because of COVID to drink more orange juice.
Okay, so there's a supply-demand issue in addition to a crop problem. Citrus greening is something we've reported on, been a few years, but it sounds like we may have to update that story. Okay, let's close with two terms. Backwardation and contango. I think you were saying that we've noticed this in a few commodities where the spot price, the cash, is higher than the futures. And that is what's called, do I have this right, backwardation?
Right. Contango is the opposite. So what that means is if you have incredible pent-up demand like we did last summer and all, you know, ADM and Nabisco and all, everybody's trying to buy wheat in the cash market to cover their needs because of inflation and all this pent-up demand. The futures has to catch up with that, that's a bullish. When cash is well above the futures, the futures market has to catch up, and you tend to see the nearby contracts weaker than the deferreds, right? And then you have this explosion, this squeeze in the nearby contracts. That's happened with wheat last summer. It happened with natural gas with concerns about a really hot summer than a cold winter. It's happening with tin right now. It may happen with silver. And it could happen with corn and soybeans if we had this continuing drought in South America over the next 6 weeks. But with some easing in that situation right now, there's not really this panic by commercial firms to be buying futures in corn and soybeans unless we get into a squeeze situation. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Well, it does a little bit. And I always appreciate this because you're always trying to relate things back both the corn and soybean route, but there's all these other products that we want to make sure that we're hearing about. And all of these things are intertwined in one way or another because someone's shortage is another person's, oversupply situation.
It is, you know, and I think, you know, a lot of the clients are asking me, obviously farmers want to know, do you buy puts or sell some cash crop going into 2022 into the spring and summer? I mean, prices, $13, $14 beans, you know, and $6 corn compared to what it was when I lived in Iowa back in the 1990s and 1980s is pretty darn good. And my suggestion is with inflation, with La Nina continuing or coming back again, with potential for some weather rallies this spring and summer, particularly maybe in wheat the next couple months or so, is probably not to sell a lot of your crop just yet. Wait until the April, May, June timeframe when we see what La Nina does and hopefully take advantage of some prices then, you know.
Are you talking, is anybody asking you about 2023 yet?
No, you want to ask me?
Well, it was a question on the show last week. Someone was asking, are you more excited about 22 or 23? And, and Matt Bennett was like, he was kind of like waiting for me to ask that question. He goes, it does look pretty darn good right now in 23. He goes, I wouldn't want to necessarily sell everything, but I might dip my toe in it.
I think, by 2023, inflation is probably going to have cooled off by then. And the odds of getting back-to-back droughts in the spring wheat areas, in the western through northwest corn belt, 3 years in a row back-to-back is pretty unlikely. So if we have that sort of 2011 situation there, 2010-2011, back-to-back droughts, the odds of it happening in 2023 is pretty unlikely. We could have actually really big crops a year and a half to 2 years from now. So there'll be opportunities to hedge at potentially at higher prices on this spring and summer. Again, the ideal thing, of course, would be to see South American weather turn really bullish. See beans go to 15 to 16 bucks in 4 to 6 weeks and corn to 7, and then hedge some then. But I think we have to wait for a spring and summer rally to actually do that based on U.S. weather, not South America right now.
James Romer, anything else that we want to cover?
No, I think that's pretty much it. Well, we're talking to you.
I will make sure I send you a photo from how cold it is, and just a screen grab of my onboard vehicle next week when it's really cold, just to remind you what you left.
Well, I remember working in Iowa back in the 1980s, those 20 below zero winters. I actually loved it. I used to go swimming in Celebrio Lake when it was 35 degrees, not 20 below, but 35.
Not this week, you won't. A little cold, ice on the top.
I got to come out and visit soon.
All right, sounds good. James Romer, good to talk to you. Thank you so much. James Romer of bestweatherinc.com. He's got those newsletters, always full of great charts. Thank you for watching, listening, or reading. If you have any feedback for the program, market@iowapbs.org is the email address to use. We'll see you next time.